We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This season, all your favorites have one home for the holidays. Yours with Disney Plus.
Merry Christmas!
Moana, Woody, Buzz, Captain Marvel, Darth Vader, and Homer will all be there, so make room. Make Disney Plus your home for the holidays, streaming Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, Nat Geo, and 30 seasons of The Simpsons. That's something to celebrate.
Merry Christmas to you!
All these and more now streaming. Go to DisneyPlus.com to sign up now.
Right now, when you come in and switch to T-Mobile, you get the amazing iPhone 11 Pro on us with iPhone XS trade-in.
Aren't these mountains majestic?
Joe, are you even looking?
I'm posting these amazing pics I took with my iPhone 11 Pro. It has three cameras.
Whoa, those pics are amazing. And you have service too?
T-Mobile. Their newest signal goes farther than ever before.
Then you can look up whether these are bear tracks, right?
Or we could just run.
Come to a T-Mobile store today and get iPhone 11 Pro on us with iPhone XS trade-in. And right now, get four lines for just $30 a line with AutoPay. Switch today.
Contact us if you cancel or credits may stop and full price due, plus taxes and fees. Via 24 monthly credits for well-qualified customers with qualifying service and finance agreement. Zero down with trade-in plus $31.25 times 24 months. Pre-credit price, $999.99. 0% APR while supplies last.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, episode 104, Unmissable Opinions, brought to you by the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community. Thanks again for tuning into the show. You can tap in your show notes on the app and check out the show notes to subscribe. You can also find us on social media on Twitter at the Barcelona Pod. We're at HeltonD13 for me and on Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. Our closed Facebook group, which if you had tuned in to the earlier show this week with at Deanna Christine on Twitter, obviously you know her, Deanna Christine, a friend of the show. We did La Ronda, where we got our questions from the closed group on Facebook. That's tbpod.link/group. We also do deeper dives and discussions in that group, so check that out. You can ask to join, just three easy questions. You answer the questions, and this is what I do say, answer the questions, and it's an easy let-in. You get the green light, and you can join that discussion and ask those questions. You can also help us out on Patreon. It was our Patreon page that allowed us to make Monday's show. And again, a big thank you to all those who do contribute and help us to continue making new episodes of the Barcelona Podcast. That's why we have two this week. And I promise you on Monday that we had, or Tuesday, that we had a special guest. And that is why, if you're, again, you're on Twitter, you know Deanna Christine. And you also probably know this next guy, my co-host for the day, Ahmad, best known as at AhmadF_O on Twitter. And of course, that will be, just click on his name in the show notes and you can follow him, give him a follow if you don't already. But he's a man known for stirring the pot, not playing nice with internet trolls, but also giving great detail and great conviction behind the opinions he does have. And Ahmad, thanks so much for finally joining the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be part of the show.
So today we're getting into La Gran Pregunta, as we didn't have one on Tuesday. And today's La Gran Pregunta, it's going to go in a lot of different directions here. Do we overvalue international performances? And while the spark that lit this fire initially, Ahmad, was Messi, this again being last week, didn't make the final three for FIFA's best. And so the backstory behind this is that Ronaldo, as in Cristiano Ronaldo, Luka Modric, and Mohamed Salah are the three finalists for FIFA's Best Award. They top a short list of 10 players, which obviously Messi was on, along with Man City's Kevin De Bruyne, Raphael Varane from France, and Real Madrid, Antoine Griezmann from Atletico, Chelsea's Eden Hazard, Tottenham's Harry Kane, and PSG and France's Kylian Mbappe. And Modric, at the Champions League draw, was also named as the best player in Europe for the season, Madrid winning the positional prizes for goalkeeper in Keylor Navas, Sergio Ramos took home defender, Modric got midfielder, and Ronaldo got forward. And with all those awards being handed out to the Champions League winner, the team that finished fourth in the Liga last year, and looking at even the final three, where Mbappe didn't even make that, or Griezmann, for the World Cup, it seems like a lot of weight was put in the Champions League. That's why Messi, again, for all his records last year, for all he did in the domestic campaigns, in Copa del Rey, and even for the performance he had with Argentina at the World Cup, making it to the knockout stages when it didn't seem likely at all, it seems like the awards really do just focus on the Champions League, and I don't know if we can read too much more into that.
Yeah, that's true. The awards have always been like that, so the players that have been doing well in the Champions League get the most credit. And when it comes to Messi and Barcelona, they're basically the victims of their own success. And when it comes to La Liga and how easy it has become for Barcelona to win the league, this isn't really coming for Barcelona's advantage or Messi's advantage. The league is becoming something that is trivial for Barcelona, or even people expect us to win the league every season, and that's becoming relatively bad for when it comes to individual trophies, and our play is becoming recognized by the media. So Messi won't really achieve anything on the individual level as long as we don't reach the Champions League final or, of course, win it. So as things stand, I think it's going to be the case for the next few years as well. The league won't matter as much. Neither will the Copa del Rey, obviously. So it's all about the Champions League. It's all about the prestigious competitions. And I think that's what really plays a huge role in these individual trophies. And it's always going to stay as such.
And that's incredible to me, because when you watched Messi in La Liga games week in and week out, the consistency he showed. And again, it wasn't every Barcelona player, but the consistency that Messi showed, just phenomenal. I can only name one or two, and I'm not talking just about the Roma game, and obviously Messi didn't even start in the Levante loss. But for Messi, there were very few moments where he seemed to be sluggish and starting slow. And then there were other times when, if you watch the first last season, the first 20 minutes of the second Celta de Vigo game, that, I mean, he was just otherworldly, and I know we say that a lot, but there was a 20-minute stretch when I don't think any Celta de Vigo player could physically even touch him, and I don't know if, and we know this, I don't think any other player in the world gets to that level. But that said, again, the people who are voting on this, as you're mentioning, aren't watching La Liga games week in and week out, and when you talk about even that short list, you can't tell me that everybody on that voting committee is watching each of these guys so regularly in their league campaigns that they're able to, truly make an educated decision on this. And that's why you even look at the international break, where this is a time when players do not only make their name, but these are the results and things that you remember even more so than the current domestic campaigns going on, because obviously Champions League hasn't started. So the guys that now are at the forefront of whatever this year's conversation is are the ones that did well at the Nations Cup. And I guess we can start with Spain there, that, you know, that 6-0 win over Croatia after Croatia had made the final of the World Cup. This is obviously why Modric gets a lot of attention, and it doesn't hurt that he's also with Real Madrid. But I think it puts a weird question. I want to bring up even Rakitic here, that it puts Rakitic in a weird position here. You look at this 6-0 loss to Croatia, and obviously him looking distraught has been on all these papers and all these headlines. And after the World Cup, it seemed like the world got to learn just how important he is. And while so many Kool-Aids don't rate him for what he is, and yet the second Spain dominates him in his 100th cap, casual viewers who finally rated him properly after the World Cup obviously just turned on him, and it's so easy to discard a player after one match. So I don't understand how someone so devout to both club and country can always be so polarizing. He's not an Ibrahimovic, he's not a Diego Costa kind of character. He's just such a go-with-the-flow, unpolarizing personality, and yet he's such a polarizing guy. But for all the bad headlines, I guess I'm still happy to see that he got some of the positive attention he deserves. But I don't know. I think it just puts him in a weird position playing in these huge matches in the World Cup final and then coming back to Barcelona and knowing that Barcelona is not being watched week in and week out by everybody, that now Koulé is the ones who are watching those matches seem to not rate him again properly.
Yeah, that's true. I think Rakitic is a very special case because he arrived in an age where Xavi was leaving the club and the club was looking for a proper replacement that is basically a player who's technically gifted and someone that the Barcelona fans can relate to. And the Rakitic isn't exactly that to a certain extent. He isn't the most technically gifted player in the world, and he doesn't exactly have the DNA which is basically wrong in any case. But it's a common topic that's always discussed, and that's why the fans will never really relate to him on any level. Maybe the fans who watched Barcelona before Pep Guardiola to a certain extent might relate to him, but many fans won't, and that's never going to change because the image that they have of him and the thing that is being displayed the most on the media is that he's the hard worker type of player. He's the player that's going to give the most effort on the field and so on. And they don't really discuss his ability to create and his ability to help out the team in much more intelligent ways. I think he's also a victim of the media to a certain extent. When it comes to social media, of course, that's very obvious. And when it comes to the national team, he was in a situation where Modric was getting all the attention, and that's normal because overall he is the better player. He got less recognition overall throughout his career. I think some players are just unlucky that way for the setting that they're in. I'm sure many fans, probably the ones that are outside social media and probably of the ones that have witnessed different Barcelona sides who have a different type of exposure and so on, would possibly rate Rakitic for what he is and not imagine him under a different context and then criticize him accordingly. So as things stand, I don't think that's ever going to change. I just appreciate him for what he's providing for the team so far, for his effort, and he's a very dedicated person. He's a professional, and he never really caused any issue, unlike other players. So as things stand, I'm just glad to have him, and I'm just hoping that he can still provide a lot of support for the team in this next season.
Yeah, along with Busquets and Coutinho, he's the incumbent starter. And speaking of Busquets, and continuing on with the Croatia theme, that Spain 6-0 drubbing of Croatia, the reason it stands out during this international break is not only because Barcelona didn't have that many players who actually even were sent out. We saw the Jasper Cillessen with the Netherlands team and Umtiti and Dembele were out with France, and we had Busquets to Spain. And the reason we focus on that Busquets game, and obviously we talked about Rakitic already, but only Sergio Busquets for Barcelona started in that game. Sergio Roberto was available off the bench. And that's a team now led by Luis Enrique that obviously in that dismantling performance looked like a reinvigorated side, looked like they had things really together in a way that they never truly did, had captured at the World Cup. They seem more direct. They play Luis Enrique style. And I even saw you mentioning that Luis Enrique, and you've defended him before, Ahmad, and you have to agree with it. And not only did he, you know, in 2015 was at a fantastic campaign led by that front three trident winning the Champions League Cup, but Luis Enrique seems to, in hindsight, because of the way he left Barcelona, already become some undervalued manager of Barcelona, as if people don't remember the heights that Barcelona were able to be, were flying at when he was with the team. And that said, though, with Jordi Alba not selected and Gerard Piqué now retired, do you think this is also a bad look for Barcelona in not having a major role in the Spanish national team anymore? So I think this is two entirely different topics, so I think you go in whatever direction you want to go with, either in the value of Luis Enrique now in his time at Barca, or whether we talk about the the amount of Barcelona players in the Spanish national team and what that means for not only Barcelona's cultural identity in the nation they're still a part of, or what that means just about the, I guess, as a complement to the international makeup of the team.
When it comes to Luis Enrique, I think he arrived in a similar situation like he did when it comes to Barcelona in 2014. And a lot of people don't remember this, but in 2014, the team was in a very specific phase. It was very critical to have someone on the team that would push the team forward. You're talking about your captain, Carles Puyol, he decided to retire the year before. Messi was on the worst form of his career, basically. Iniesta, people were doubting Iniesta overall. They were doubting Dani Alves if he could continue like this or not. They were doubting how dedicated Piqué was and if he could actually regain his form or not. And then Luis Enrique stepped in, and everyone seemed to found their forms again. And that was the incredible part. What he did and his work in the team was more mental than anything else. And that's mentioned in Iniesta's book. It's mentioned when Piqué is talking about Luis Enrique. They say something very specific, and they all repeated the same thing, the same idea, which is that they thought about things differently, and they were pushed further by Luis Enrique. So what he did is that he revived this generation of players, and he brought in some type of motivation, and that's what they needed. These guys did not need to learn about football. They know it more than anyone. What they needed is some type of motivation to move forward, to win more trophies. You've won everything so far, but that's not enough. Let's win more. That's what they did in 2015, 2016. So they had just lost the league trophy, and they've witnessed Real Madrid winning the Champions League trophy in 2014. So they went on and they won the league and the Champions League, and the year after they won the league again and the Copa del Rey. So he brought in something that was much needed, and the same case applies to Spain. Spain don't have these experienced players anymore, so Piqué retired, and Iniesta's is out of the way as well. You have many players who are not there. So in the case that they're in, they have these incredible young players like Asensio, like Isco, and all of the remaining players can provide a lot. But in the World Cup, they were going through a very tough phase. They had just lost their coach a few days earlier, and I think that was a tough patch for them. So Luis Enrique came in as a savior type of person for them. So he came in to motivate them, to push them further, and that's exactly what they displayed against Croatia. And this type of dedication and motivation appears the most under Luis Enrique, and that's what we had with him as well. So whether when it comes to the comeback versus PSG or all the successful events, it's all because of the team being dedicated enough and wanting to show more. So that's when it comes to Luis Enrique. When it comes to Spain and Barcelona's presence in the national team, I don't think it's weird that we don't have many Barcelona players in the national team. After we have Umtiti, a French player, then we have Alba, who's obviously not going to be picked by Luis Enrique anytime soon because of the thing that went on back then. We have Piqué, who retired, so that's it. We have Tristegen, who's German. You don't have these extreme Spanish players or the good Spanish players who could actually make it. So you don't have Sergio Roberto, who did actually make the final cut. So everyone else is either not Spanish or not good enough, simply. And that's something that the Barcelona fans have to deal with. We don't have the best Spanish players anymore. So they all either retired or left, simply. So Thiago, for example, is a player who left, who is not here anymore. And Iniesta is a player who retired. So that's it. We don't have the same generation anymore, sadly.
Yeah, and the only worry that has, and this was brought up a few weeks ago on this show, that with the academy, it's unbelievable how many Catalan products Barcelona is able to churn out. And even if they don't break into the first team, just the sheer number, again, Catalonia is not one of the largest regions in the world. It is a large region with a lot of people in it, but it's not one of the largest bases in the world for footballing talent. And yet Barcelona is able to churn out Catalan product after Catalan product that they're able to pick up out of their own backyard. My only worry is that in the same way that Real Madrid brought, I guess we'll say, won the signature, and we don't know how hard Barcelona were fighting for the signature of Dani Ceballos, but when they're able to grab those kind of talents and bring them in the way they did, and that being Real Madrid, the only worry is that a 8-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old is going to be watching their, you know, the Spanish national team at some point, and they're going to say, well, I want to be playing for Spain. I want to be there. And so my future, if Real Madrid and Barcelona's academies are both asking me, then Real Madrid is my better shot. That's the dream. That's the team that represents Spain. And so that would be the only fear, is that youth products, and I'm talking real young in Spain, start to believe that Real Madrid is more connected to the national team than Barcelona is. And the truth is that it always has kind of been that way. Obviously, that's the way it works. The whole controversy of Barcelona and Girona going to the States, again, does at least half of it revolves around the Catalan independence movement and the way that those two teams are represented and what they do represent. And that said, that's only my big fear, is that this is a big product, a big issue down the line. And Ahmad, you could even curve that. This is, again, coming from someone who lives in the United States, so I see the issues with the U.S. team and the way that Mexico has the pull, particularly on players closer to the U.S.-Mexico border, because Mexico promises certain things and they have a plan that it seems like the U.S. at times doesn't showcase. And so that's the way that I think that Real Madrid would say, look at here, we're in the Spanish national team, in a way that Barcelona doesn't. So my only worry is that Barcelona is going to lose some of those local talents, like Abel Ruiz, like Iñaki Peña. Those are guys that are not from Catalonia, but instead from the Valencian community. And so those would be two guys that might even reconsider, not those two particular, but players of that ilk.
Yeah, I think this will go down to how the management deals with things in the next couple coming years, because as things stand, they could actually sign some Spanish players, and some could actually make it and some would not. The same thing for Real Madrid. So Real Madrid could have players as well who end up not making it. So I think Real Madrid are doing better than us in terms of signing the Spanish players that would eventually go on to the national team. But when it comes to Barcelona, you'd have some certain players who, for example, Paco Alcácer, for example, you have certain players who simply did not make it, and that's not really that's not really Barcelona's fault in any way. So true, when it comes to Dani Ceballos, for example, the club could have done better, but in any case, Dani is not exactly having the time of his life at Real Madrid either. So Luis Enrique picked him because of I think his young age and so on, and he believed in him. But under any coach, he could have easily missed out on Dani, for example, and moved on, and no one would have really talked about it. So I think it's a matter of how the management deals with things in the next few years, in terms of luring in some young talent and making sure that they're more represented in the national team. I think that Barcelona will never lose that presence in the national team, and even if this current team doesn't have many talents, in the next few years you might notice more and more players emerging, because these things change, and the selection and the coach's selection has always changed, and I don't think there is much to worry about at the moment. It's all about how the management will move further in terms of signing Spanish players and who they're going to pick. So yeah, I don't think there is much to it's just a matter of predicting at the moment.
Right, and seeing that the shelf life of players at the international level, and we are seeing at the youth level, of course, Abel Ruiz, he was the star, and we have over at BarcaBlog.com, if you check that out, we did a La Masia profile of him a few weeks ago, and just talking about some of his international success, and even the guys who paired with him for those games, whether it was a Judy Mbula, now with Monaco, started with Barcelona, Sergio Gomes, who started with Barcelona, now with Dortmund. So you do have guys coming from the La Masia still making appearances for Spain, youth teams, and we'll see where all those guys, again, who do have that Barcelona background instead of Real Madrid background, seeing where they break through. Well, another quick one-off topic here, and again, I just want to get your quick thoughts on this, just to kind of go along with our themes of overvaluing international performances. It seems like Yuri Mina was also nominated by his fellow professional footballers, so not just writers, but the other footballers, for the FIFA Pro World 11. He is one of those guys who, a candidate, not necessarily making the Pro 11, but he is one of the nominees. And obviously, it was those performances at the World Cup that got his value to be what it was. And when he went to Everton and his market value was so high, he did go for the amount that he did, which is a good thing for Barcelona's payroll. And yet, it does help that he's still very young, that his market value is so high. But obviously, anyone who watched Levante and who watched Yuri Mina at Barcelona last year knows that, I mean, he was selected to be for this nomination just simply because of the few matches he played at the World Cup. And that does kind of show you that, I mean, when all eyes are on players and all eyes are on guys, that's when people notice and take notice. And do you think there is something to say that the players that show up in those big, big matches, that there is a special X factor about some of those guys that can deal with that kind of pressure in ways that, again, when Mina couldn't figure out how to show up against Levante, a team that you can almost guarantee he didn't know about until he was basically in Spain, as opposed to when he has to go up against the likes of Japan or Nigeria or these world-renowned teams that he's known watching the World Cup since he was a kid?
Well, the true thing about Yuri Mina is that he's not a good defender overall. This is basically like the main point that needs to be said out loud. He's not among these. He shouldn't be part of the nominees for sure. When it comes to the how people's perception of the international competitions and knockout competitions in general, so the most prestigious ones, which are the Champions League and the World Cup, or of course any other international competition. Of course, when more people are watching and when you're the one scoring since recently, and it wasn't the case like 10 or 12 years ago, if you score, you have a specific place in people's minds. So even if it's not even your job. So people will look at you differently immediately. But in reality, what he displayed, and whether against Levante or any other side that he faced, is his actual set of skills. And I think we should differentiate between what he actually can do and what the public wants to believe that he can do. So you're not going to change what the public thinks. And the public have defined some certain things throughout the past few years. That's why Messi is not among the top three. They've defined some certain competitions that they look at. They've defined some certain aspects of a player's game. So if you're scoring, you're there. If you're not scoring, you're not there. If you're in a top competition and you're doing things, you're there. If you're playing in it is a top competition, La Liga, for example, it's simply not as important. So we do overvalue what happens in international competitions, and I don't think it's fair for countless players. And for Yuri Mina specifically, it put him in a very weird place. He's not among these people yet. He could become a much better defender later on. As things stand, he's not there, simply. And they're just pushing him to be there, which is very odd.
Another aside we have, this is the time during this international break when we spent all summer dealing with, but it's a time when the rumor mill really gets wild and going. And Flamengo midfielder Lucas Paqueta, who played with Coutinho and played with Arthur with Brazil, made his debut the same time Arthur did against the U.S., it seems like in the reports that come out involving these stories, the kind of language that you see is stuff like Barcelona looking to strengthen and renew their midfield, which to me, obviously, these are the kind of key words that you can see and find that tell you how much rubbish a story like this is. I mean, with Busquets, Coutinho, Rakitic, and then Vidal, Rafinha, Roberto, Alenia, Samper, and even Puig and Callado below him, where is another new professional, particularly one like Paqueta, who needs grooming and he's in his early 20s, so he needs time? When is he going to feature? It just seems silly to me that this is this when these stories come out. And Ahmad, as again, you're a big figure on social media, you really do have to question whether or not you hit retweet on certain things or what you like and what you mention and which players that you take a stand on, because you don't know which ones are truly linked to Barcelona, which ones aren't. So what's the process that you go through to figure out if something is truly rubbish or not?
You're talking about purely just checking the credibility of something that I read, right?
Of course.
I don't, when it comes to these things, just check the sources, for example, that's it. And usually I ignore, like you could say, 95% of everything I read, because what I've learned over the past 5 years on social media is that, as you mentioned, there's a lot of rubbish when it comes to everything that you see on Twitter specifically, because on Twitter you have much more rumors than any other platform in any case. So I decide to ignore like 95 to 98% of everything I read, and I just stick to the Catalan, some of the Catalan journalists, for example, and I take that basically as just an indication. I don't read much into it. So I like to avoid such headlines as much as possible, because I've learned that they're only going to lead to some strange misconceptions. So I decided to just avoid them.
Yeah, well, let's wrap this topic of overvaluing international performances up with our final, we'll say, big chapter of this. And what I do want to ask is, let's actually just break this down honestly and straightforward. When Messi announced at the beginning of this year at the Supercopa that Barcelona, well, at the Gambert Trophy, should I say, that Barcelona has their focus this year on a Champions League in a way that they didn't. This is him taking over the captain's armband, him saying that this is the goal, he wants to bring back the Champions League trophy. And it seems to me that there's an understanding there by Messi that part of his and Barcelona's legacy is going to be defined by the Champions League trophies, obviously, as we've been talking about this whole show, much more than La Liga titles. And, you know, listen, I love watching La Liga and the domestic league here in the States, but here in the U.S., where, as we've said, nowhere near is La Liga given the credit it deserves, largely due to the availability on the American TVs, as I discussed with Deanna Christine on Tuesday's show. But even with the Premier League and Bundesliga largely being boiled down to the success of their champions, I mean, who had a better year last year, Man City or Liverpool? Man City cruising to the Premier League title, Liverpool getting to the Champions League final and knocking out City. I mean, that's a serious question to ask in the face of the media, in the way that we're going to remember it. And it's silly just to think about posterity, but that is a question you ask about legacy. And that's something that Messi now, at this point in his career, begins to wonder. And I know he's never cared about the legacy. He just really just wants those trophies. He's always said that. But you have a trophy now so connected to his legacy. And the unfortunate reality may be, and I think it is that this era is defined by these inconsistent knockout titles. Then that's the way that it has to be, and that's the way that it's going to be done. It has the biggest platform, the most money, the most ad revenue, and has the biggest brands in the world competing. And in 2018, that's going to be the trophy you want to take home in ways that it might not have been 30, 40 years ago. And in the case of the World Cup, I think it differs a little bit from the Champions League in that players don't choose where you're born or who you're born to, but that is a competition that started all of this, the World Cup did. And comparing the two, I think, is a trial for another time. So just focusing on the Champions League, you know, the consistency of the Liga is much, much more gratifying for you and I week in and week out. But that's unfortunately not what history is going to remember. And Messi knows that. So I think it's a positive thing that the focus has been directed. And I think, we've broken all this down. But I guess the big question that I ask you, Ahmad, is that how do you think, in hindsight, this... not lack of Champions League trophies, because again, the team has five in a 13-year period, or four in a 13-year period, but where do you see all this shaking out for his legacy, for Barcelona in this time's legacy? Even the post-Pep years now has been 6, 7, 8 years of time has gone by that you wonder how we're going to discuss this in the future.
Yeah, when it comes to the Champions League and its importance to the club and to Messi, it's becoming more and more important for two main reasons. The first reason is that we're not winning it, which is like the obvious reason. The second reason is that your rival and like the main purpose why you do things and why you push yourself further is actually winning it. And there is a third reason, and it's considering how prestigious it is. And the gap between the Champions League and league trophies is only going to continue to increase because of the countless things that you mentioned, ad revenue and the exposure that all the teams are getting. And this will only increase with time. As for the Liga, no, it's going to stay as such, unless they go into different countries and so on, which is a totally different topic. But as things stand, the Liga will never increase its importance. The competition itself is becoming Barcelona's competition with occasional Real Madrid or Atletico wins, which is good for us. But overall, it's becoming very similar to the Bundesliga, where you have one side that's dominating and people will eventually lose interest. As for the Champions League, you have different teams and more drama involved and more things to basically more small factors that create these exciting matches and these surprising incidents, and that's why it's always going to be the most prestigious. As for Messi, I think that a Champions League trophy or another one, because he won the past four, another Champions League trophy will not make his legacy in any way better. It's always going to be, his status as a footballer is never going to change. He's always going to be recognized as the best of all time, and for some people, one of the best of all time. This Champions League trophy won't really change anything about his career. Everyone knows what he has achieved. I believe he wants to provide something to the people of Barcelona, to the people that were in the stands that day. He was trying to tell them that we will try our best to make sure that this trophy, the one that you've been asking for the past 3 years, since 2015, is coming back. And that's something to motivate the fans, to make sure that they come to the stadium, to make sure that they're always excited about matches and so on. So I think he's doing this as a leadership type of thing. He's trying to show that he's there. He's trying to show that he's going to push as hard as possible. And I think that's really great, because the club needs this at the moment. The club needs a Champions League trophy in order to gain back this type of exposure and this type of significance. As long as Real Madrid keep winning it, Barcelona will always be affected somewhere or the other, sadly.
Yeah, that's just the way it is. And one of the last-ling one-offs before we wrap this show up, and speaking of the Champions League, the Barcelona Femení, this is in the news, were defeated 3-1 in Kazakhstan in the first leg in the round of 32. Now, the women's division, a little different. They don't do the group stage like the other Champions Leagues do, but it's a round of 32, two legs. And so now, on Wednesday the 26th, they have a lot of work, that being this month, they have a lot of work to do back in Barcelona to keep that up. And for the Barça Femení, their exposure and the following that they have with the international superstars they have, whether it's Lucky Martins, Tony Dugan, again, those are international superstars on that team too. So losing in Kazakhstan would be one of the biggest upsets that we've seen. Unfortunately, a big, big bad piece of press for a team that unfortunately just doesn't get enough coverage and does not get enough people talking about them. So again, best of luck to the Femení now in about a little less than 2 weeks' time. And now lastly, Ahmad, the question I'll wrap this show up with, this is a light, easy one. The third kit, inspired by an aerial view of the city and the city's famous layout of, I guess you call them super blocks in English. I can't remember the Spanish word for them, but they don't seem to be well-liked. But what kits are praised on release outside of the away Senyera kits from a few years ago? Obviously, everything is usually hated on Barcelona, for Barcelona on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, wherever, Instagram, wherever you might have you. But what do you think of them, Ahmad? I'll just ask you, and then I'll follow up that up by saying is we get on our Twitter pages, again, a lot of our great listeners and fans of the show like to put up the jerseys that they've collected. So I would go back and ask you, if you were to design an away kit and the third kit, Ahmad, what would they look like for you?
Oh, I have no idea. But when it comes to the current third kit, the one that was recently displayed, I think that I like it, but I would change the colors, definitely. That's it. It's just a matter of preference in this case. I like the third kits of 2016. I think they were the blue ones. I don't remember. But as things stand, I'd prefer a much darker color every now and then, or something that is just one plain color, just like we had in 2012, for example. We had the black kit, for example. We could try this out again. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think and people now saying that Nike and Barcelona, maybe they shouldn't be working together. But for me, it's just all a matter of, and there's so much written and so many wonderful blogs. And again, one of the reasons the internet exists is so that we can talk for hours and hours and hours about uniforms and club identity and how those things are related. But Ahmad, again, thanks so much for coming on the show. We'll wrap this one up, and I just want to give you a chance. Obviously, people can find you on Twitter, but what would you say, again, I guess is your pitch for people not only to follow you, but where else can they find some of your work?
No, actually, everything that I post is only on Twitter. So that's the only place where I'm active. I don't want to bother more people than Twitter people. So I think that's more than enough, yeah.
Well, again, Ahmad, thanks so much for coming on to the show. And thank you to the listeners for listening to another edition of the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. And Forza Barça. We'll be right back.
Right now, when you come in and switch to T-Mobile, you get the amazing iPhone 11 Pro on us with iPhone XS trade-in.
Aren't these mountains majestic?
Joe, are you even looking?
I'm posting these amazing pics I took with my iPhone 11 Pro. It has three cameras.
Whoa, those pics are amazing. And you have service too?
T-Mobile. Their newest signal goes farther than ever before.
Then you can look up whether these are bear tracks, right?
Or we could just run.
Come to a T-Mobile store today and get iPhone 11 Pro on us with iPhone XS trade-in. And right now, get four lines for just $30 a line with AutoPay. Switch today.
Contact us if you cancel or credits may stop and full price due, plus taxes and fees via 24 monthly credits for well-qualified customers with qualifying service and finance agreement. Zero down with trade-in plus $31.25 times 24 months. Pre-credit price, $999.99. 0% APR while supplies last.
And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle.
It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.